Good evening and welcome to this LSE public lecture on the world's climate capital, COP21 and the greening of Paris. My name is Philip Brody. I'm the executive director of LSE Cities, which I run with my colleague Ricky Burdett. On behalf of tonight's two hosting partners, which besides LSE Cities is also the LSE European Institute, it's my great pleasure to welcome our guest speaker, the Paris Deputy Mayor for the Environment, Celia Blauel. Before I'll introduce her in detail, let me make some introductory remarks and also introduce the structure of tonight's event. Last year, Paris became a global reference point for some of our greatest fears as well as hopes. The tragic events of January and November 2015 stood in great contrast to the Paris that hosted the world's climate summit during the first 2 weeks of December, and is, of course, the sort of optimistic side, the Paris of hope and global inspiration, which we're going to hear about today. COP21 was a breakthrough, and on 12th December 2015, all of the almost 200 negotiating nation states supported the Paris Agreement. And even if the details are all too well known, the main 4 points of the agreement deserve to be highlighted again and again. So I will do the same. First, to peak greenhouse gas emissions as soon as possible and to achieve a balance between sources and sinks of greenhouse gases in the second half of the century. Second, to keep global temperature increase well below 2 degrees centigrade and pursue efforts to limit it to 2.5 degrees centigrade. Third, to review progress every 5 years. And last but not least, to raise $100 billion a year in climate finance for developing countries by 2020, with a commitment to further finance in the future. Now, tonight, these are crucial points, but they only serve the purpose of critical backdrops, as we're not going to discuss the role and commitments of national governments, but instead we will focus on urban climate action and the role of cities. Over the last decade, much has been said about this relationship. The latest IPCC report included a dedicated chapter on human settlements. The UN's Sustainable Development Goals on Cities, the so-called urban SDGs, specifically referred to climate change mitigation and adaptation. And the Habitat 3 new urban agenda to be launched in Quito later this year will certainly make strong references to climate change. Our own work at LSE Cities, including for the Global Commission on the Economy and Climate, the United Nations Environment Programme, and the C40 Cities Climate Leadership Group, has also focused on some of the most critical links between urban development and climate action. While not going into any detail and considering an increasing robust body of evidence, this relationship can be summarized in one sentence. Good urbanism more or less directly equals good or a better climate. It's for this reason that cities and city governments have become key agents for accelerating climate action through more progressive policies, testing innovative solutions, and for pressuring their national governments to pursue more ambitious climate targets. During COP21, the combined power of cities was clearly on display when more than 100 local leaders, including 700 mayors, and we'll hear more about this in a moment, met in Paris and jointly submitted a strong message to the national leadership. Tonight, we will hear about also the reverse relationship and how the political momentum related to COP21 and having hosted many cities-related events during the 2 weeks of negotiations allowed for a far more favorable climate, local climate, for implementing environmental strategies in Paris itself. Our question this evening is about how negotiating a Paris Agreement has affected Paris and whether hosting the World's Climate Summit has made Paris the world's climate capital. Let me introduce the structure for tonight. Celia will speak for about 45 minutes, after which I will ask her a few questions, and then there'll be about 30 minutes, I hope, at least for Q&As, where we can all, with this very compact group, engage in a conversation. So let me now introduce Celia Blauel, who is the Deputy Mayor of Paris in charge of environment, sustainable development, the climate plan for energy, and hydric resources. She has held this role since the municipal elections in March 2014, when she was elected member of the Paris City Council. So she's an elected deputy mayor. In June 2014, she was also elected president of the board of Eau de Paris, which controls the production and distribution of water in the French capital. Since 2008, she has been an elected councillor of Paris' 14th arrondissement, where she was initially in charge of green areas and communication technology. During her term in office, she worked for the development of community gardening and helped to initiate a public debate on new technologies and their health impacts. She's a member of the Green Party since 2006 and has been particularly active in areas such as housing, health, and the environment. Prior to her current roles, she also worked for the National Institute for Prevention and Health Education and was responsible for national communication campaigns related to the use of drugs and alcohol. Originally from the French region of Alsace, so a Parisian by choice, Celia has a background in political science and obtained a degree from the Strasbourg Institute of Political Studies in 2003. So please join me in welcoming Celia Rauer.
Hello, thank you a lot for your invitation. I'm very glad to be with you tonight. Always a pleasure for me to cross the channel and spend some time in England, and it's also always a pleasure to share the Paris experience, talk about the green policy, debate also about it. So just at the end of this presentation, feel free to have any question, critiques, whatever you want, and feel to tell me about it. So tonight I'm going to try to tell you about the whole things we're doing of being Paris, of building Paris as a green capital. I just read on the train coming here that some days ago the UCL study said that Paris was the city that was the most investing in climate per inhabitant. I don't know if it's really true. I have to read that in precise, but let's say that, yeah, we are really on the road to build a low-carbon city. And before starting my presentation, I think it's always important to repeat why we have such a strong link between climate and cities, because it's not always that obvious. First, we have to recall that, as Philippe said, cities have a big responsibility for climate change. Today, cities are gathering 50% of the global population, so we, the inhabitants, with our way of living, consuming, we are producing 70% of the GHG emission, but also we are responsible for the scarcity of resources. But if we have that responsibility, we also have a capacity to act in cities that is very much different than the national government. And I'm kind of used to say that we are so much more efficient in acting to face climate change because we have public tools to act, really efficient public tools, public policies that we can implement, because we have that current territory on which we are acting, and also because we have a link with citizens in their large definition, citizens, companies, associations, NGOs, that even has to be improved. It's really important in implementing climate policy. So that's why many cities all around the world are now acting for many years into implementing climate policies. For Paris, we have nearly 10 years of action, a comprehensive strategy that I'm going to illustrate tonight to explain you what we are doing. And as you may understand in that context, 2015 was a really important year for us, having that international conference on climate being held in Paris by the UN, and a really important year for me as a new elected deputy mayor. It was a year definitely centered on COP21, so it was really enthusiastic. All the big events on the city was turned to COP21, La Nuit Blanche, that is that big art night that we have, all the things for the children. So it was really, really amazing how we were going month by month to go to that big events, but I have to say, because I have to mention it, it has nothing to do about what we expected, because we had to experience that terrible terror attack on November the 13th. And I have to say that has a completely big impact for me on what happened on COP21. First, because for me, at a personal level, for 24 hours, 48 hours, I didn't know how to go on with COP21. We were just so struck and so amazed about, was shocked, but what happened. I just remember I had to decide if we were going to be holding a big event in front of the City Hall of Paris that was supposed to gather a lot of people. Shall we do it? It was really a complicated time. But at the same time, the people of Paris were so amazing going out the next day saying, we are here, we're standing, that we went on in that COP21 thing. But definitely it gave it also a sense for me, and that would be my second point, that with that COP we completely went beyond the only environmental problems. COP21 is not, climate now is not just about environment, saving the planet, it's like putting really a big society debate. It's about the society we're living in, consumption, production, mobility. It's about fighting against social inequalities. And that was very interesting, that was the point that lots of people until then, especially in the French politicians, were saying, this is something about ecology, green movement. No, this is something really politic. I just want to temper that not everybody shared that political debate, obviously. Not all the people in Paris shared that big political momentum, but more people than before, and more people sharing it in a really broader vision for society. And what was interesting also during that year is that we would see appear new division lines about that big society debate. Before, you had like NGOs, environmental people willing to save the planet, the bad companies that want to destroy it, politicians that don't understand anything about it, and that was giving like the political scene. Now you have two worlds that are competing. The ancient world, people definitely struck in kind of political acting, decision making. They don't know how to do it, anything else than how it was built since the 50s. And you have the new people that are willing to change the system, to go beyond the borders, and that is true for politicians as much as companies, as well as NGOs, and that is what is a new interesting thing. That is today my main conclusion about 2015, and maybe in the discussion we go on what is the Paris Agreement, is it good or not good? But that makes me have your question on another way, and another way I wanted to address it tonight. Was actually COP21 influencing Paris' agenda and the city's agenda, or is it the city that influenced what happened in COP21? I would, as deputy mayor of a city, rather trust the second thing, saying what was really important in COP21 is like local actors just took their strengths, made their voice heard, and really influence what is going on in the COP21 international state process. And for us, it was not the beginning of anything, COP21 and 2015. It was actually pushing, highlighting a whole range of action that the city is being implementing for 10 years now. It was a year to strengthen public action, to mobilize civil society, but also to take that specific role for city on the international stage. And as I will say lots of times tonight, for me, we have a big difference between cities, that cities have goals and action for 10 years. We are now implementing transition and ecological and moving towards lower carbon. And we have states that are still negotiating, speaking, talking. And that was actually one of my big ambiguity on COP21, and maybe we also talked about it, because some days I was going on Le Bourget when the COP21 was held, thinking this is so nice, people coming from all over the world to save the planet, and some other days that I was thinking people gathering for the 21 time, and still they don't have any agreement, so what are they doing? But maybe this could be a part of our discussion. So, first point, it would be Paris climate policies. As I was telling you, Paris is very much involved in climate policies for 10 years now, with two pillars. The first one that we started 10 years ago, that is about mitigation. Every city all around the world now is doing mitigation. It's about how to lower footprint and how to reduce the GHG emission of our cities and of our activities. To do so, we have done first an assessment of all the carbon emission that we have. What we have to recall is that in Paris, the main sources of emission are buildings, transportation of people, of goods, but also consumption and waste, which is actually, I guess, more or less the same in all cities all over the world. And another interesting thing is that only 20 to 25% of this GHG emission depends on the City of Paris decision, one only person of our city's act. So it remains 80% that is directly linked to activities and that needs a specific way of acting. To answer that question of mitigation, we have adopted a climate action plan, first one in 2007. It was a new one in 2012, and there's going to be a new one next year. The idea is to mitigate our GHG emission by 75% by 2050, with the first important step, as you can see, by 2020, that we have to achieve goals in mitigating, reducing energy consumption, and developing green energies. I can already say that this is the goal we have by 2020, but obviously after COP21 and after all the new commitment that has been done by city, these goals are going to be revised and rewritten, and we're going to start by this year, and it's going to be over by next year, to write our roadmap by 2030 with very concrete action to be implemented, but also looking really forwards and think about the city and put goals by 2052. This strategy, this goal, are very theoretically, so I think it's always really important to illustrate what we're doing. So we have implemented a comprehensive strategy, meaning it's inspiring all the public policies of the city. I just want to stress more in details on some of them. One that, for some of you that were here this morning, I already talked about. It's like, as I told you, buildings is one of the most important sources of emissions. So we are now having a massive retrofit plan, first in the social housing buildings, because it's where we are owning the buildings. So since 2007, it's nearly 4,000 to 5,000 social units that are being retrofitted each year. I think the last figure I have, it's like 32 social units that have been retrofitted. And now, by this year, we're taking a new step in that action as we decided to enter the private sector. It's much more difficult to enter the private sector because you cannot like decide and then it's implemented. You have to convince people to invest money to do that thing. So we're launching in 1 month what we call the 1,000 building plan. And the idea is to help 1,000 building in Paris to get some advice, to enter a retrofit dynamic, to help them to finance regarding social aspect. We're not going to finance the richest people of Paris. And have the idea that by 2020, we will have normally 1,000 buildings advised, 300 retrofitted. This is on housing. Another really important area for us to deal with is transportation. It's important because it's GHG emission, but also it's air pollution. I don't know if you saw that terrible images of Paris some one year ago. It was like the fog in Paris. It was really awful for some days because we heard that air pollution peak. Actually, right now, there is a new air pollution peak in Paris. So we definitely have to move on that special question. To do so, we have a wide range of action to change the way we are addressing mobility within the city. The first thing is to see all the urban policy, to totally shift from urban policy as we know it, centered on individual cars since the 50s, to shift to something else. That's why since 10 years now, we've been putting a lot of money on public transportation, creating the tramway, extending Metro Rail, creating at last in Paris, because we were really late compared to other cities in France, cycle lanes. We have right now a big program to renovate 7 big places, historical places, Bastille, La Nation, République, to change these places and to get rid of most of the cars and get to something more for going by walking, by bikes, etc. We have that very big programs, and if you go to Paris, you definitely have to go there. It's like getting back riverbanks to the people. This is something that is completely new in Paris, and it's like one of the best places to go and have a drink these days, so I really recommend. So we do a lot of things on urban policy. We also work a lot on alternative transportation. For individuals, it's Vélib, bike sharing system, Autolib, the electrical car sharing system that are really symbolic of that transition we are implementing. Symbolic because it's against air pollution, but also because we're switching to something new. Autolib today is you don't own your car, you share your car, and you are going to a new economy. That alternative transportation, we also help a lot professional to move, to shift to it. Taxi are getting a grant if they go to electrical. All the small companies, craftsmen, shops can have also some helps. And so we have many, many different things to help people to let their individual car to switch to that kind of transportation. Now, a big project that we have, and that you know about it because you have it in London, I guess, I don't know how it's working right now, is that we have planned to have a restricted circulation zone. The idea is that by 2020, the most polluting cars won't be able to access Paris anymore. We're going to go steps by steps, the most polluting in the first time, and then going steps by steps, with the idea that by 2020, kind of nearly zero car using diesel, which is at the heart of the health trouble, won't be able to access Paris. This point is very, very hard this day, creating really big public debate and creating very good, strong tension with the national state. And it's very hard to go on like this, but we are definitely determined to do it. And I have to add that we had our first car-free day last September. It was a big success. Also big tensions with national state that didn't want to allow us to do it. But we, with that success, the sun was there. We definitely go for a new car-free day this year. I'll stop also on energy. Energy is very much a big issue for cities right now. For us, we have, let's say, four main issues to work on. We are willing to develop all the potential that Paris can have to develop green energies. That means working on solar. Today we have 50,000 square meters of solar PV, and we're going to go further in the years to come. Again, tension with the national state, because it's kind of hard to develop that, but maybe we talk about it. High potential in geothermy. We're working a lot of it, and the company I'm running, Water of Paris, is actually also now doing that kind of thing. So we have lots of installation within the city. We're working a lot about experimenting to generalize recuperation energy, meaning taking heat from sewage system, from what else? I can't remember. Yes, sewage system. Now I have like kind of a hole in my head, but doing that to warm up schools, water in swimming pool. Oh no, data centers. Sorry, this is one of the main issues these days, taking the heat from data centers. So this is like the big issue we have these days. And also, we are very willing to develop very much our heating, urban heating system, which is one of the largest in Europe. And what is really interesting is now 50% of the heat produced comes from renewable energy, so this is a big point for us to develop it. And we are one of the first capital to have a cooling district system. This is actually pipes having a really cold water running, and that is like an ecological way to climatize buildings. And I have to add that since the 1st of January, all the buildings of Paris administration are now have a 100 green electricity, no more nuclear in our buildings. So energy is a big issue. As time is flying, I'm not going to talk about food right now, maybe later on, but just to let you know that all this action that are illustrating the climate action plan are very important because they are working on and having effects on GHG mitigation. Of course, it's good to go on that 2-degree path that was set in Paris Agreement. But definitely it also has big impacts on the life of people within Paris. It's health improvement because air pollution is a big issue. And when you are talking about transportation, it's not only about GHG emission. It's about fighting air pollution sources. It's about rebuilding the city and have a better comfort of life also and quality of life. buildings, it's the same. It's GHG emission, but it's also reducing air pollution sources, because it's a big also sources for air pollution, the buildings that are too old, and it's also working on comfort for people, or air life quality as well, and to tackle energy poverty, which is becoming a big issue for us in Paris. And eventually, it's jobs creation. What is sure is that having held COP21 in Paris, it was a way for me to highlight a lot of that politics that we've been implementing, and it was also a time to convince definitely all my colleagues in the city council or the deputy mayor that we have to go on that way. Because during 2015, everybody was fighting for climate because it was really fashion. So it was the time to make political decision, and I actually used it a lot to have a, to strengthen the political commitment of the city of Paris and to set the path till 2020. What was new in 2015 for us is that we were implementing something new. It's adaptation strategy. This is the second and obvious pillar of any climate policies, but it was something really new for us. It's actually how to live with the effect of climate change. The planet has already taken 1 degree, and this has an effect on our life, on the life of people. Climate change impacts is that you have extreme climate events that are occurring much more, droughts, floods, hurricanes. It has impacts that are very different, and I think it's really important to stress on that. On the countries of the north and country of the south. In country of the south, it's different. It has a direct consequences on vital aspects, as the question of water, food supply, agriculture organization. But it also has impacts in the north. When you think about New York, Katrina, or when you think about what's happening in California, really modern, rich states, but they don't have water anymore, meaning that we have to deal with that thing. That was so a new step to adopt that adaptation strategy, but it was also an issue for me that we could adopt it in September 2015, because actually normally it would have been adopted right now. But the idea was to say we, a city, are taking into account adaptation. Adaptation was one of the key issues of the negotiation by the UN. And the message we wanted to send was to say if a city can do it, states should do it. And that was also kind of us to support all the 1,000 countries that have problems with adaptation. So the first thing for us with the adaptation was to see what it means, climate change, on the effects for Paris, and what it means as climate events, but also what where we wanted to go further and what to see what were the impacts of climate change on the scarcity of resources and what consequences on the long term it will have for the city. And that's how we elaborated a new strategy. The first thing we learned, I have to say it, from the study we made is that Paris was robust and strong to face climate change, but still that we have four topics to work on. So we have four topics we work on it, 30 goals to be reached, and as much action as we will need to reach these goals. I just want to illustrate some of these goals because this is so much what we're doing every day. So the first goal is, as any adaptation plan that you have right now in any cities, would be protecting Parisians against extreme climate events. In the case of Paris, it's heat waves. We know that by 2060, 2080, a summer, as we knew it by 2003, I don't know if you remember, but it was really, really hot summer. Many people died in France, actually. Really bad memory for French people, would be the rule. So the summer are going to be hotter and hotter. But what we know also is that climate change is higher the risk for floods. And I guess that is something you know in London. So this is something we have to prepare for. Right now in Paris, we are actually playing a huge exercise with 100 people participating, cities, army, hospital, the people dealing with electricity, with mobiles, all of that people, to see how we would react to such an event. The idea we have today is to test our crisis plan. For example, that I'm running the water company, we are playing as if the River Seine was going into our water plant. So we are putting protection, seeing if we are able to put that protection. We are activating our emergency well that we've built within the city. We have 6 emergency wells in case of we couldn't have water supply anymore. We have tested how we can help other cities by supplying them by water. So that is how we are testing our crisis plan. The other aim of that exercise is to see how we can coordinate, because it's really good to be good on your own, but if you don't communicate with the others, it's going to be very hard. Or because it's very hard to make a water plant work when you don't have electricity anymore, so we're really testing that. And the third level of action is, and I think it's the most important one, is to communicate with the people of Paris, because we don't have that in France. Maybe, I think in New York they've done a lot about that. I don't know how it's in London, I have to have a look at it, definitely, but we don't have that culture of risk. People think that, people are very, have in memory that picture you have on the top, well, I have in memory, that was 20th century, 1910. That was like the biggest flood that Paris had at that time, and it has big consequences. The city couldn't be, was totally stuck for 7 weeks. But people think that now we have lots of technology, so we can stop the water. But that's not true. Water comes within the city. You can be as technological as you want. It's going to be a big mess. We have a study done by the CDE, I don't know how it's in English, European International, really clever institute, saying that if we have the same water flood that by 1910, we could have like something like at minimum 20 billion of damage. The more we have a really modern city, the more actually problems we have to deal with, because everything is, for instance, underground, electricity, tubes, gas, water supply, sewage supply, and when there is water in it, just everything is going to be stuck. So we have to just to make the people aware, and we are starting to work with them to see how they can also organize in a small urban area to face that. So that is one of the big action we have within that adaptation plan. Another big plan we have is to deal with water supply. As I don't know if you remember, the second axe was ensuring water, food, and energy supply. I'm actually going to link to water and food supply. First, to put into prospect, you have to know that study showed us that by 2060, 70, climate change is going to have an impact on underground water supply, minus 20%, and also on supply coming from the River Seine and the River Marne that we are using, and that is going to be like maybe 30% down. So that means we're going to have to deal with quantity of water, how to do it that everybody can have access to water. And we're going to deal with quality, which is already an issue in France, because France is very much in love with pesticides and all that chemicals that we put in agriculture. So the less water you have, the more the pollution is very high. At the same time, we have an issue about food. Food today, we know that if we have big strikes, as we could have by the past in the city, and that lorries cannot access Paris anymore, we are going to, in 3-4 days, we don't have anything left to eat in Paris. So now we are thinking about dealing and finding action to prevent all that thing and to prepare for this. One of the actions that I'm really fond of, and I think it's really interesting, is so that we are linking water supply to food supply. And to do so, we have an important tool that is actually the water company that I'm running, that's lucky, that is Water of Paris. And I have to mention, because it has an importance also in another debate that we could have with climate change, that this company is 100% public ruled. It was the private sector that was ruling water supply in Paris until 2010, so it's really recent, and the city decided to take back control on it. So we did it for two reasons. The idea that water is a common good, that it cannot be used for commercial, to be sell, and that it has to be a public rule, but also to give all the the public, all the money from the water bill to investment within the public system. And I'm quite often saying that the shareholders of Water of Paris are the people of Paris and are the future generation. And so, to link water and food, you can see here the green areas on the map. Actually, 50% of the water that is arriving on the tap of people of Paris is coming from underground waters. The rest of it, 50%, is coming from two rivers, Seine and La Marne. And so today, we are taking 50% from three main areas in Normandy, Bourgogne and Lyon. And that green areas, more than 100 sources that we are using to give water to the people in Paris. And as you may understand, these sources are in agriculture area, and we have a big problem in agriculture in France these days. So we're working now with 140 farmers. With them that they change the way they are doing agriculture to lower the pesticides that they are using, and in the best cases, we are going to grow organic food in the area, really in the south. It's the places we are the best results, and in 6 years we multiplicated by six the surfaces of organic food. It's very interesting for us because it's a big step for water quality, even if it's right now a drop in the ocean and we have to go very much further. But it's also very important because it preserves soil and air. A part of the air pollution in Paris actually comes from pesticides. It's cars, buildings, and pesticides. And what is interesting for us, and that's what I'm working on it, is that tomorrow I really want to create a coherent economical and local system to feed the city, meaning that we're going to use that partnership with agriculture to build new economical links and at last reinforce that link between urban and rural areas that doesn't exist anymore. And it has actually also a direct link with a really current debate we have in France about a kind of a fascination for having a big production in France in agriculture and export it, and actually people are not, it's not a sustainable system anymore, and rebuilding local production. And I think it's an important work, and that makes me just stress on the fact that I think it was really important for that situation, but from all the environmental issue, all the social issue we can have with water in the next years, that it was an important step for us to take back control on water supplies, because now we have also a new company model, a new tool to work on that kind of question. It's a public company, so it's a company that has to achieve financial, technical goals, but that is at the same time really implementing a political project with environmental and a social aspect. Then last important thing that we are working in that adaptation strategy is also to what we called fostering new lifestyles and boosting solidarity. What we heard about solidarity is that we are thinking about international solidarity as much as local solidarity. In that adaptation plan, we are creating a green fund for cities, meaning we have the feeling the green fund with the states is not working that much, so we're going to try to implement a green fund where cities can put money in and then help some cities to develop adaptation projects. But we're also working about solidarity at a smaller scale. I was talking before on urban units, the city itself, maybe the new metropolitan area, but to go in a way to strengthen the dynamic towards that sustainable city in a way to rebuild local community, to build social cohesion, and to leave the best that we can and as much as to face extreme situation. To build actually that social cohesion is, I think, one of the conditions today to build what we call, and that we hear a bit lot more and more about, resilient city, how to face shock. And I have a little story about that. It was when I wanted to start working on resilient city, I actually proposed the mayor that we join with the city of Paris, the 100 resilient city network that was set up by the Rockefeller Foundation, so we are now a member. And I remember the first time I met the responsible for that program. It was, I think it was in December 2014. And I was talking with him and he said, that's okay, come on in our program, your adaptation strategy is very interesting. But you know what, I'd like to work with you as also on urban violence, on terrorism, on terror, sorry. And I was thinking, this is an American, you see terrorists everywhere. They are crazy, but they have money. So, okay, yeah, we're gonna work on it. And 2 or 3 weeks later, we had Charlie in Paris, and then I thought, I'm such a visionary person. No joking, it's just like really interesting how you can link all these issues and how definitely for me climate has nothing to do just with saving the trees, but building a really coherent and a new vision for cities and society. And I can tell you we need it so much in France right now with extreme right coming up. So that makes me the link with the other really important thing in our climate policy, which is civil society mobilization. It's something that is really important for us, and as I said it, I just see some faces I've seen this morning, but it's really important for us to build that civil society mobilization because 80% of the GHG emission depends on them. So you have to involve them and you cannot just order. You have to convince people to come with you. And it also corresponds to a new political culture that I think I'm definitely convinced about it as a green politician, but that I think is very well shared in Paris today by Mayor Hidalgo, that is definitely not a politician like the one we've known until now. And the idea that we have to go for more participatory democracy, how you integrate people in the decision making, and we are experimenting something on the budget right now in Paris, but it's just really how to go further, not just to vote on the internet saying you like it, and how we just recreate places where we can have debate. And it doesn't matter if we do not agree, we need that debate and we need to understand each other to go further. And that's why 2015 was also a very important year for us, linking climate society debate to the real Parisian in Paris. So we decided with the City Hall to support all initiative that was proposed to us. We put like finance support to NGOs, associations, big, small, whatever they had to say. We gave each time we could, the public space in Paris, we had like fairs and things all the time on the République Place, so that lots of people could share about that debate. And also, we decided that we would expose all the things that the city was doing. So we had different time from spring to December to show up how everybody could get involved. So in spring, yeah, we had a big night about the acteurs of the Paris Durable. There are people on the top there. It's like the 10 best one of the year 2015, but there are now something like 180,000 people that are now involved in Paris in sustainable development. Sometimes it's just like gardening in that district. Sometimes it's just building a new startup, and it's just like how they make the city move. And the idea is not to tell them you have to. The idea is to say you're doing something. We're just going to help you to grow bigger, meet the right people at the right time, that your activity just go further. After the citizens was the company time. We made a big demonstration of the company is in the innovation on the riverbanks. And then at the end of that, we had what we call Paris de l'avenir. It's a play on the word saying future of Paris, the bet of the future. And that was the event I was telling you that we were holding during COP21 in front of the City Hall. That was a big momentum, shall we have it? And it was actually a big success, really nice exhibition at the same time that we held that local leaders summit. There was kind of a big regret on that year that the big event of the mobilization should have been that big march for climate that we unfortunately couldn't have. And I think that will also certainly make a change and in the way the public opinion will go on that climate issue, but it was just impossible to take the decision to organize it considering the terror attack and the situation we were in December. Last thing of our climate policy is that idea of a new city diplomacy. I think that pictures tells a lot about it, but it's true that for many years, cities are involved in many different networks. I guess you know well in London C40, but we also are involved in Energy Cities, ECLAY, UCLG, each of them having their own specificities, but the idea is that we are together working on climate issue. And what I think very much interesting and what struck me when I was in my first year in Deputy Mayor in COP20 in Lima is that when you talk about climate, cities are really in a cooperation way. Whatever our political background is, geographical background is, when it's about climate, you just think we have to find solution. And so we have to find technical, finance solution, and we work together, and it's very interesting. We are also developing a lot of international solidarity program. For instance, in Paris, we have 1 million euros each year to support water and water supply projects. We work now on waste to help some cities. And I have to stress on that, especially in water, we do that business-free, because now it's a business to help city of the south. So that's what is interesting in all that networks. But what was very important in 2015 is that beyond cooperating, doing things together, cities really wanted, I think, for the first time to make their voices heard, saying, we know its solutions are local, we know what to do to face climate change, but we also want support. States cannot let us on our own going on implementing policy with not all the legal frameworks and the finance to innovate and do things. And also there was a big thing, a call to action to states, please, we are a bit tired to see you negotiate, do something concretely and take us into account. And it was like that a big thing that we wanted cities to be recognized in the Paris Agreement. And so many different things happened during 2015. Many initiatives by the cities, but I think obviously the most revealing one was that the climate summit for local leaders. 1,000 local leaders flew to Paris, 700 mayors from all over the world. Among these 700 mayors, I'll say it again, 112 or 16, I can't remember, female mayors, which is really important. We had a really nice session about women during that time. And it was a really, really huge moment. We also have people really nice like Leonardo DiCaprio and Robert Redford that came to talk about climate, which was even more interesting. But what was really interesting at that time is that, again, cities took new commitments to go on the way to 100 green energy cities. And we had like four or five commitments. Again, like having a step ahead the states. We are, the states are here, and we definitely are here with the cities. But what was really important was that the fact that for the first time in COP21 history, the UN Secretary General, the President of the French Republic, the Foreign Minister, they all came to the Hotel de Ville of Paris to listen to the cities. It's huge because a year ahead, when I was in COP20 in Lima, we had a dialogue between cities and the UN. And to understand what a dialogue between the city is and the UN is that you are the cities, I'm the UN, I come, I speak during half an hour, then someone else of the UN speaks, and then someone else, and then someone else, and then the mic is to the cities. And at that time, everybody sits, stand, and goes out of the room. Letting that poor our foreign minister alone didn't know what to do, and the cities were talking to empty chairs. So that was how the city were considered in COP20. In COP20, cities were also being mentioned in the text and being erased in the last hours between the text was released, because recognizing cities in an international text is also was a big issue for some states that didn't want their local government to be recognized. So it's a kind of a big fight and something really big that in the Paris Agreement we are now recognized, and definitely cities will use it, because I think it's just the beginning of something new that we are seeing now. I don't know if you heard about that book, but it's really inspiring lots of things in Paris. That is, If Mayors Rule the World. Definitely today, and I strongly believe that real political power is going to be in that new metropolitan area, cities, and that more and more mayors will make their voice heard. And I think for the best, because as I see today, I feel much more efficient in what I'm doing in a public and a local mandate than what some of my friends are stuck in national governments. So that's the three main guidelines of our political strategy in Paris for climate. Having said all of that, you can understand that I much more believe that cities have an influence on COP21 than COP21 had a real big influence on Paris, apart from the fact that now we were highlighted in what we're doing. And that would be actually the guidelines that I'm going to follow in the next years, and definitely to accelerate the dynamic and go on building that new, resilient, sustainable, but definitely also more equal cities in Paris and sharing with the others. Thank you.
Thank you very much for allowing us to start appreciating the enormous efforts that happen behind the scene. Some of the policies you mentioned we have witnessed from a distance here in London, like the car-free day. It was actually commented on quite considerably. Now, I will use my privilege as the chair to ask the first question, but then let's really open this up. And I want to come back to two cases you referred to, which were difficult to go through. You referred, I think in the London context, we would refer to the low-emission zone, but you called it the restrictive circulation zone. Basically, a policy for vehicles restricting access to the area of the city. And you said this was a politically sensitive area, and national government, if anything, wasn't really backing you. You also said that the car-free day itself led to some tension with national government. So my question is whether the dynamics last year of hosting COP21, in those heated debates you had in these moments where national government wasn't helpful, ultimately did the trick. You were instrumentalizing that moment. That in some ways, COP wasn't relevant to, in the end, get through.
If COP21 was a way for us to get our point, you mean?
Correct. To get these two specific policies.
Yeah, definitely we're using COP21, but on air pollution, we are also using public opinion. Actually, we're stuck by two things, is that Paris is a very specific situation in France, because historically the state is very much afraid of the city of Paris. So because we had the La Commune, people taking over and throwing all the rulers out. And so apart from all the mayors in France, the mayors in France can do whatever they do with transportation, except this, the mayor of Paris, that has to do it with the agreement of the state. So each time we want to do something on transportation, we still have to have the state that says, yeah, you can do it, you're good people, you can do it. So that is a big fight right now, that the mayor of Paris has the same power to decide on that kind of thing. So right now when we have air pollution peak, we cannot decide that some cars cannot come within the city. We need the Minister of Environment to say yes also, and this is really complicated. And then the other thing is that, again, to forbid some cars to enter the city, we need a legal framework that has to be set by the national state. We had an agreement. The idea was we're going to put, like, colors on the car, so the most polluting would be red, and then yellow, orange, yellow, green, and then red cannot come, then red and orange, and so on. But now the environment minister says it's really bad with people because it's not nice to do that, and they feel bad. So she wants to change to something else. You're going to have the green one that are good and the other one are bad. But that's actually not good for us because we cannot go step by step. We cannot say from one day to another to people, you cannot access Paris anymore. So the tension is there. It's about political vision and also real that trouble that we have in COP21 is the same in France. Either you take your responsibility on the national level or you give real powers to the cities.
Thanks for clarifying. So I'm going to now take questions, and I'm asking sort of maybe three people to always kick off, and then we'll put it back to Celia. So one question here, two.
So today marks the 100 days left until Britain has its referendum on the European Union. As a deputy mayor of a major city, of a major country in the European Union, do you see any pros or cons of the European Union in terms of helping you deal with environmental issues in Paris or France?
Thank you very much. We'll certainly remember that question.
Thank you. I am interested in the water problems that Paris could have. You mentioned flooding, but there is a problem on water efficient, because in London there is one campaign of meters, and maybe, I don't know, in Paris you have the same campaign of all the households are have meters already. How works that?
All right, thank you very much.
Hello. As well as coming up with strategies for cities, what would you say for institutions such as LSE or universities that are very influential? What can they do to be more sustainable?
So EU, water and universities.
EU, I'm very actually sad that you're having that debate, because I'm very European convinced, and actually I build part of my European vision in England when I was an Erasmus student, and I definitely took all the border down when I was living with noisy Spanish students and Italian and Japanese that are still my friends and we still meet. So for me, yeah, Europe was built for me in England, so that's so bad. But still, European Union is helping. We are benefiting in the city of Paris of some programs to accompany the retrofitting. My question these days is how to benefit from the invest plan, from the Juncker plan, and the problem is that still it's going through the national state, and it's the national states deciding where the money is going. So the idea is how to interfere, to go directly to the EU, and it's kind of complicated, so I'm still working on it. That's all I can say about the EU. But then EU is also, it's climate, but then EU for me, it's also definitely linked with agriculture. And we have a big problem with the EU. EU is a very nice idea, but when until lobbying and industrial and economical lobby will be so powerful in Brussels, politics won't go in the right sense. So we definitely have to fight to change that also in Brussels, which is not that easy. That's why I'm also very much promoting the idea we should throw out a lot of our politicians to have much more courageous people there and other places. On the water metering, I'm not sure I got your question, meaning do we have also a metering campaign? I would say no. Metering is like having in each flat metering, yeah. We don't have that in Paris because we have that historical thing that I have 3 million clients for the water supplies, but I only have 96,000 people that are getting billed because we are metering at the bottom of buildings. So my clients are buildings. Some people are willing to meter in every single flat, and I'm kind of opposed to it because it's a lot of money for something I'm not sure I see the relevance, so we don't have that right now. But we're still working a lot on making people having better behavior, saving water, and also working on our networks that we're saying where water with having the less leaks and all that stuff. But no, we don't have metering. And people pay regarding to the how to say that the their flats, like if it's big or not. And last question was the uni. I think uni are playing something really interesting these days about climate change, and I'm thinking about that 250.org movement. I don't know if you got it here, but it's the, I don't know how it's called in English, it was born in the uni that they launched that movement to divest from fossil fuels, and it got so high in 6 months, it got like in all spreading in the English uni, and then it comes to France. So I think like there is a way of creating something and spreading it that I think very interesting. And I think we were talking about it before. I'm going to go out of here with a lot of your publication because I'm very much interested in what you can give to me as deputy mayor, as comparison with other cities. How can I get inspired and take the best ideas of the others to implement them in my own cities? I think Paris was very much stuck looking at itself, and we have to take the good ideas where they are.
Thanks. Let's do another round, and I forgot to ask to briefly introduce yourself so we have a sense where you're from. So I have one, two, and three.
Please. Hi, my name's Elton. I'm in the cities program here at LLC. I'm just wondering whether the urban form of Paris has played an important role in terms of sustainability and environment for a city, like the restrictions of height of buildings and the Haussmann building forms, and just the density of the urban form in general, how that has played a role in sustainability. Thank you.
Thank you. The gentleman over there. Coming.
I run an organization called bluegreenuk.com, and we're trying to stop an absurd water policy of Thames Water to build a 25-kilometer tunnel under London. But that wasn't my question. I was in Paris for the COP21, and I heard President Putin announce from the platform that the solution to global warming was the commercialization of carbon nanotube technology. But I haven't seen any reference to that since. I was wondering, in the title of the talk is Paris's capital for the climate capital. So in what sense do you see COP21 as the first global mandate? The whole world has now said, yes, we want to reverse climate change, basically. Is that taking off in Paris at all?
Taking off. Is it happening in
Paris? Is it happening in Paris?
Thank you. And then we had one more. Just if you can pass the microphone to the back. Thank you. Thank you.
Hi, good evening. I work for AirUp, and I'm a CDE's alumni. Also a Parisian from origin. So I'm wondering to what extent Paris being such a bounded city on governance issues, to what extent the climate issue is an opportunity to reach beyond the ring road and engage with the city region, municipalities as a bigger entity, as a greater Paris level.
Very timely question.
So on the urban forum, I think we have interesting and not that much interesting things in the heritage we have in Paris. For instance, the water supply. Sorry, I'm really kind of fond of that. But when I was telling you about that 50% of water coming from underground supplies, you have to know they come to Paris by aqueduct. So we don't use any energy to make 150 kilometers to take the water until Paris. And also we don't pump in the natural resources, just like the emergence of water. So to some extent, the people that built Paris in some periods, was the end of 19th century, they were like really looking towards the future. It's really interesting how they were talking about sustainable city, and actually the reservoir and everything are historical patrimony that I'm still using as an industrial patrimony. So that's very much interesting. And I have like really, really low charges of energy. But then at the same time, you have historical Paris as you know it, has two bad effects, I would say, for climate change right now. Is first is like all that historical patrimony, actually that Haussmann thing, and especially what it was the worker area, you cannot touch it, so you cannot do retrofit, and it's really bad. It's really cold. I'm living in that kind of buildings, and just in winter, it's freezing, and you cannot touch it because you have such strong protection on it. So we have to invent something else. And then another thing, but I hope it will change, is that Paris has a strong protection of also historical patrimony on big places, big avenue, and all of this has been a lot of concrete on the soil because it was a time that everybody's thing has to be clean. And now if you want to change, if you want to put a tree or something, you have to fight with historical affairs. So we're going to change it. This is like history sense, but it's still kind of hard to change the city. COP21 and its effects. I think COP21, it's not magical. What I said before is that some days I was so happy to go and some days I was feeling, what's the point of losing my days on COP21 site when I have so much to do in my office? But in the end, I think it's a good agreement in a way that it's the first time in history that states just signed under the paper. But I'm not really sure they'll do what they have signed for, and we still have to find. So it means we have to go on implementing on the local basis, and we cities have to do the same work that we were asking from the states. We want the states to have a look at the cities. We cities have to have a look on all that dynamic that are going everywhere on the territory and help them to grow bigger and bigger, even if it doesn't exactly go into our politics. And I think it's only on that local level and local basis, that's why I'm really much more believing in local politics and national politics, that we're going to make that newer society thing. And still, the COP21 agreement is a political signal that we were waiting for. And for me in France, it's really the way to say to our environment minister, remember, you wanted to be like president of the COP21, so now you also have to make a legal framework. And this is not actually totally the way we're taking, but anyway. And definitely it's taking place in Paris because of really pragmatic issue. I think all political parties have known that people in Paris are asking for that, asking for the change of city. So they vote 90% of the thing I propose them in the city council. And then, I'm sorry, I'm not sure I understood properly the question. Is it like if climate will help to go beyond the ring road and do something new within the Grand Paris area? That's it? That, sorry? Like in?
Yes.
Yeah, okay. Yes, definitely I think the Grand Paris is going to be a very opportunity for us to go beyond our administrative border. The image actually you have here is supposed to be the ring road. It was done by an artist that we asked them to think about what could be Paris plus 2 degrees and how we should adapt. And in the adaptation strategy, there is a study we're supposed to run by 2020 to see what can the ring road be, other thing than just a ring road for cars and be linked with the new metropolitan area. And I think in the next year, we're going to have to face that climate issue to cooperate even more. Yeah, there are many things, and it's kind of difficult for me to explain in English. Maybe we can do it later on the meeting.
So let me, before we do another round of questions, just come back to this question of how cities learn from each other. You refer to this term of city diplomacy. And specifically in the case of Paris, are there cities, potentially even outside of France, which you're very closely watching, where you have good relationships with other deputies, and you are sort of trying to inject some real experience from another place as part of your local political debate by saying, look, they have done it, and we are going to do it as well. They have the expertise. We can borrow their expertise and really also use them as agents for change in this other city. And if so, which are these places?
I'm actually not keen of the example that we always have. I have technical links with some cities that I think are really interesting on water things, for instance. I'm looking a lot about Munich, Augsburg, New York. We have partnership to benefit from their experience on protecting water supplies, because they have been doing many, many interesting things on agriculture, saving water. Then I really like a lot of, actually it's weird, but small city initiative in energy cities. That is one of the network I'm the most involved in. There's like that Swedish mayor that is really funny in from a city called Vaxö, that is not famous at all, but yeah, someone know there. But but it made me feel like they've done so many things in the last 15 years that if they can do it with less finance that I can have in Paris, we can do it. We definitely have to do it. So we exchange on that, even if we don't have the same issue, but it's just... And then there's like a generation thing that is going on as well. I have many links with Barcelona, Bogota, in Mexico. But this was created because deputy mayor there are women of 30 years old, and that we're experiencing the same political belief, but also the same crappy political life sometimes. So I'm fighting in Barcelona to help them to go back to public management and water supply, because they have big trouble there, transportation with Bogota and Mexico also.
Okay. So another round. 1, 2, 3, 8.
Can you hear?
Yes. I'm an urban cyclist and nothing to do with LSE. How are you progressing with your cycle program? I mean, are you able to get lovely segregated cycle lanes, or are you just ending up putting paint on existing roads? And how are you getting on managing the opposition from motorists, and particularly, I imagine, from your taxi drivers?
Very timely taxi question drivers. For London.
Hi, good evening. I'm a student here within LSE Cities. You spoke a little bit about a financing fund for kind of global south cities. Philip also mentioned at the start. I'm curious about how Paris is financing itself to do this work. What are the challenges, or to what extent is finance a restriction in what you're trying to do? And maybe also, what are the kind of financial mechanisms or opportunities that you see as being worth exploring further to be able to push your agenda further?
Hi, I'm from C40, and my question is, why is it working in Paris? Why is climate action working in Paris? And what can other cities be learning from you?
Hey, Bert, what was the first question?
Cycling.
Cycling. Well, I have to admit, I'm not the big specialist of cycling. This is the deputy mayor in charge of mobility, is really fond of cycling. He could tell you about hours about that. But definitely, we're not going on just lanes painted on the floor. We are now much more developing a restricted area for bikes, even if it's kind of difficult because Paris is already so stuck with many things. And the idea today is to have real highways for bikes, at least one north-south and east-west, and also to have a main action to develop it on the riverbank, that now we're going to have a coherent things like this. I don't really agree actually with him with the fact to just like have bike place and walking place and thing. I come actually from eastern part of France, very much have the influence of German and Swiss, and I'm so much dreaming of a Paris where you could just having bikes, having the priorities on cars and buses, and that everything could cope all together. But I'm kind of knowing that it's really optimistic. You were mentioning the taxi driver. They are as bad as the waiter in Paris Café. And never smiling and helping, so I guess it will take some time to go there. About finance, I would say today the main thing is political will. We had a big fight when it was about setting the budget for the 6 years of the mandate. But again, I'm lucky to have a mayor, even if she's a socialist, she's really good at that. I'm joking, she's very, very, very going on that green policy. So we have a big budget, I think, on the 9 billion of investment that we're having by 2020. It's something like 850 million that we put on that all that thing. We also have a green bonds. We launched last year green bonds for 300 million euros to finance retrofit operation and transportation project as well. We are fighting also to have new rules, and maybe we're going to have it on the law now, to be able to finance outside the bank system the retrofitting operation, meaning that if you're an individual, you can make a loan and you can pay your loan by the economy you make on your energy bill. That link, I don't know how to explain. Yeah, but we had like a big lobby of the bank system to go against that. So we're working on all the things we can do, but again, it's not like the competency of the city, so it has to go further in on the national state. And I was saying before, we are trying to get some money from the EU, but it's not always that easy. It takes much more time to fill in the file than to get the money, so sometimes we just... And last one, why does it work in Paris? Actually, I have the feeling, well, now that I'm going abroad for 2 years, I actually realized that it works in Paris in the eyes of the people when they react to what I'm talking about Paris. I didn't have that feeling so much before that we were doing so well in Paris, so I'm happy. I think political will and actually big fights during the Delannoy mandate, the mayor of Paris since 2001, big fights, like there was like a will coming from bottom. Parisians were fed up of being like... just in a really concrete city without any nature and things. So real will, and actually at that time the strength of the Green Party within the city council that took that into public policies, and now it's very much consensual, because as I was saying, everybody has understood that the people of Paris are willing to do so. And what can people learn from Paris? I think maybe just to have a look at all the main projects we have and take it and not have to make all that long way we had to implement them. And I think just like steal them. And there was like a big article in the newspaper this week about how climate is about stealing good ideas from other cities. And I think we have to do it.
London stole many good ideas from Paris. But yeah, since we got a question from C40, I wanted to follow up on a study we just finished. In fact, my colleagues Graham Floater and Katerina Heck, they led a study which looked at the co-benefits of climate change, which is becoming sort of a strong argumentative device to, in some ways, justify local action. So you constantly argue, well, we are going to reduce emissions, but what we're actually doing tomorrow already is cleaner air, more quality of life. So that's the co-benefit argument. I wonder, and this was part of our internal discussion, to what extent we can reverse the thing, and we start arguing, well, we'll do air pollution reduction, and the co-benefit is the climate benefit. And whether, you know, you are sort of dealing with this, we could extend that even to social policies, which I know you're very keen on moving into and linking it to carbon. Any thoughts on that?
No, but it's an interesting way of seeing it, and I think it's kind of being into my mind after 2 years as a DM, is that it's really nice to talk about climate, but you have to be answering what the people are waiting for you in their everyday life. And tonight, today, if you want people to join in the climate fight and to save the planet, they have also to be convinced by the society shift it comes with. So it's about how we're going to live better, but in a different way. We're not going to have two cars and two TV sets and things, but still life is going to be okay. And yeah, you agree. Now that you say that, I think that's the point. We should maybe reverse it. I never thought it that way.
Mm-hmm. Okay, we have time for a final round. So any final questions, observations? One. Is that all? Two. And no one else? Are you sure? All right, two final questions.
Right. My name is Ulrich Hoffmann. I'm a landscape architect, and I'm from city of Augsburg, which you've just mentioned. Being a landscape architect, I obviously like images that you have on the wall right there, and I think it's very interesting that you represent a water company. And I'm just wondering, you've mentioned global warming, you've mentioned depleting groundwater and increasing temperatures, and that landscape can contribute quite a lot of it. And I'm wondering, because you are a water company, whether you create initiatives from a financial point of view that we can say green roofs are great and they save the world, but unless house owners have a financial incentive to do it and to unseal pavements, then unless there is a financial incentive, people are reluctant to do it. And I'm wondering whether you promote these measures by financial support of that.
Very good question. And then final
one. Hi. If you were stuck in an elevator with our mayor, Boris Johnson, what would you say to him?
Who is his hairdresser? No, I would tell him, please stop doing what all politicians do and play with fire with that European thing just to have a political career. I don't know if you will hear about it, but it's just like, we are I think in a really weird political time, and I think it's very important that all the people that have a political commitment, they take their responsibility, stop doing stupid things. Because if you want people to trust politics, you have to behave properly. So I think it's dangerous, that EU thing. And I guess he's cleverer than that. So I saw someone smile. I won't say who. Yes, we are giving incentive. The idea is, if you want to change the city in that way, you have to give people the opportunity to do it. But still, we have also, it's difficult to make people move. In France, they're just still like waiting for you to do it. They pay taxes, so you have to do it. So the idea is, now we are still much and more doing things. First was with the gardening movement, people going back doing gardens at the bottom of their buildings. Now we have given the possibility to anyone who wants to plant on the streets. They just have to sign a small paper and they can make a hole and start growing things. Well, that's the theory, because actually the Paris administration is a bit more complicated on that, but the idea is that. And actually we're also giving incentive to make that green rooftop. As I was saying, we're going to launch the 1,000 building plans. The idea is central is retrofitting, but if you come with a project that is retrofitting and you want to add, or I don't know, like to have PV on your roof, or you want to make a green roof, we can also put some money on it to help people to develop that kind of projects. But I have to say, we had to make a decision if we were going to be helping everybody or put some social criteria. And we decided that by this time of public financing, that is difficult, we're going to put like a social criteria to help people finance it. And to finish on water, definitely I think our cities in the last decades were built against the river, against the water. And now when you take like the will of people to go back, I can see it in Paris. Riverbank is a major success. The channels also. It was a crappy place 10 years ago, and now it's the place you're having parties and having fun. So now it's also how you put water back within the city. I'm very much thinking that we should also get rid of the concrete on the soil, work on something different. And one of the big projects by 2020 is also to get back to swim within the city. Mayor Hidalgo actually liked a lot. I don't know where is that lake you can swim in London, though. No? There is a place you can swim in a urban area. Yeah, certain time, okay. So we're working now on how to being able by 2020 to swim in the channels, maybe in some of the woods. And the idea is, with the Olympic Games candidature, to go in cleaning the River Seine and having some sports events in 2024 if we get the Olympic Games and whatever to allow the people of Paris to swim in the Seine. But this is kind of a really enthusiastic projects, but very difficult to reach. But I'm really happy to have to deal with that.
Okay, unfortunately, I have to bring this now to a close, and I'm not going to summarize the enormous wealth of information we got tonight. I think it's become clear that behind this big banner of COP21 and a location where it happened to be hosted, this idea of a Paris Agreement actually resonates very much if we then hear about these stories, what the city has actually done with it and about it. Maybe even more importantly, I think what we have heard today and seen today is how important the messenger of these stories about urban futures actually is. And having a young, dynamic female deputy mayor being optimistic, enthusiastic, I think is something which is incredibly important for advancing this agenda. And I can only wish you good luck. Make use of this asset you have and the optimism. And we hope to hear more about Paris. And we hope that our new mayor, to be elected in May this year, will very much continue copying the many good policies you are putting in place and you have tested already so fabulously. So thank you so much for making the journey across the channel and look forward to an ongoing engagement. And thank you all for coming tonight. Thank you.